This program is brought to you by P1 Australia Racing Components, the designer of the oil heat mats for dry sump tank applications. Find out more about the truths on engine oil heating at p1australia.com.
Thunder Media.
Hi, I'm Chaz Mostert, and you're listening to Inside Supercars.
From the racetracks across Australia, and here's Inside Supercars.
Coming up on this episode of Inside Supercars.
There is more to come. Okay. Yeah, there needs to be. You can't do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. What they call it, it's a sign of madness.
You know, one of my pet hates is people to say that that's the way we've always done it.
You know, we have to listen to our fans. We have to listen to how we continue to grow that network. The engagement, you know, everyone sort of talks about the F1, how do we drive to survive? You know, the engagement of the women, the engagement of families.
So sit back and enjoy as Inside Supercars starting now. Welcome to Inside Supercars, Tony Whitlock. It's just moments after a 90-minute practice session at Tapa with Peter Zabiris of Newlon Racing, get the name correct, Tony, because our sponsor's name is important.
100%.
Indeed.
Very much so.
So, Peter, I just wanted to really get an update on where you are, because obviously in the last, I say 6 months, but maybe 8 months or something, you've reinvigorated your team. You didn't change drivers, you kept the same two lads and Timmy Slade and James Golding, and you went and got some new engineering staff, and you got a number of crew people that changed. Tell me about where you think you are in the process now.
So I suppose we're still in that that building stage. You know, you'd love to think that you could throw arms and legs at problems and overnight those problems get fixed and sorted, but they don't. You need people to gel and for people to work out who's who in the zoo and who, what, you know. I always say you work at what lane you're in and you've got to stay in your lane. So we're still in that phase where we're still understanding each other and learning. And I feel like we're actually just, the momentum is starting to build. I know success, you know, we all want success and it will come, but it's on its way.
Indeed. Now, like a number of other team owners up and down this pit lane, you know, guys like Charlie Schwerkholt and the Blanchards, you know, you all run successful business ventures. Yours is a very large, principally rental leasing business. So yours is obviously one that cash flow is very important in. And you have a number of offices, I don't know how many, but and also 100-something staff?
Yeah, we're probably up around 250 now.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That is a large workforce.
Yeah.
So here you've got sort of 40 or 30 sort of people, and they're all focused on one thing. Clearly, Tim and James are both driving well.
Yep.
They had success last weekend. That must encourage you to see that, and obviously this first practice session here to see James so far up.
Yeah, no, well, look, sometimes you got to take the little wins, and yeah, we were the fastest GM car, which is good. It doesn't mean we're going to win on Sunday, but it gives us, you know, it definitely tells us that we're heading in the right direction. Look, the team, I mean, you mentioned the business, the team's like a department or a sector. Every department has its own managers and people and all the rest of it, and the race team's no different. So again, it's all about having the right people in the right job.
All right. Now, I visited your factory last year, and it's a very nice office and workshop you've got there. You feel you've got most of the elements now in place to sort of get to success? That's just the next part of the equation.
There is more to come.
Okay.
Yeah, there needs to be. You can't do the same thing over and over and expect a different result. What do they call it? It's a sign of madness. But No, we've got some, you know, like a, this year, like last year was a building year, and hopefully if the plan goes well, you know, we'll get to a point this year where hopefully we come out swinging next year, and we'll be up there, up, you know, at the pointy end.
Okay, the appointment of Steve Robinson as your team manager, and Ludo Lacroix, who are old mates from not only, of course, at 888, but also some years ago in Audi, in the early days of their racing careers. So they got reunited, and of course, they're parts of those building blocks for you.
Correct. Yeah. It's, and sometimes in when you're building a team or a workforce, sometimes you need one person to attract the next person, and then they'll attract the next, and so forth. So, you know, it's all about having the right people, the right culture, and then you just keep attracting like-minded people that want to be part of that group, that culture, that team.
The one thing I will ask you about is in the hiring business and generators and lighting and all those types of bits and pieces, toilet blocks and that you lease and rent, what are the important parts of that equation, getting those things right?
There's everything. Everything's from your equipment, your personnel, your procedures, your customers. It's like, you know, I've never baked a cake in my life, but you can't bake a good cake unless you have the right ingredients. And whether it's in business or racing, you've got to have the right ingredients, and that's what it's all about.
Well, when you do bake that cake, Peter, I hope I'm there to take a slice of it, because I'm sure it'll be very excellent. Peter Zavira, thank you very much for joining us again on Inside Supercars.
You're welcome.
I'm with Simon Brookhouse, the CEO of Tickford Racing, and it's post-qualifying, and one car in the 10, Cam Waters nearby, listening into everything we're saying, and the other one not far away.
Yes, absolutely. So we'd love to have both in the 10, but to have Cam is great, and he'll go out in the shootout and no doubt put it on pole. That's what we're looking for.
Indeed. Now, as I mentioned to you, I wanted to actually text you at the time when I saw the Jack Jumpers win a championship, their inaugural championship, because it is only their third year.
That's right, yeah, third year.
Because, take us through, you were talking before about your background in sport.
Yeah,
after
sure.
Banking came sport.
Yeah, that's right. After I left university and went into banking through agribusiness sector and various other commercial roles, but always had a passion for sport. So I then had the opportunity to, I was chairman of what then was the SEABL, South East Australian Basketball League, and I had the opportunity to go and be CEO at Knox Basketball, which at the time was the largest association in Australia. But they wanted someone with a commercial background because the endeavour was to build a state basketball centre for Basketball Victoria out in the heartland. So we successfully did that. And then I reached out through a friend of mine who used to work with in banking that when the job came up as CEO of Golf Victoria. So I went across to Golf at a time when they'd merged the men's and women's organisations. So it was essentially a new entity, Golf Victoria, and I did that for about 7 years. And we then brought through the what they call the one management model and dissolved the federal or the federated model of having states sitting under Golf Australia and made it one organisation. So Golf Australia then governed the states, which is quite unique in Australian sport. Normally it's a federated model, and I did a couple of years as the 2IC effectively, or General Manager of Operations at Golf Australia. Because of my basketball background, Larry Kesselman reached out and asked if I wanted to be involved with setting up the franchise in Tasmania, and so I went down there. I'd lived in Tassie before and jumped at the opportunity. You don't get it very often to set up a team from scratch in a professional sporting league, so I was off to Hobart and away we went.
Right, and lo and behold, that in the second go at being in the grand final, it's a 5-round series, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. We made the grand final in our first series, in our first year, which was just amazing to be part of, and I think that if you asked anybody, everybody had tipped us to come last in the first year. We had a real challenge recruiting players because every other team knew we were coming, and the free agents all got locked away before they came on the market, so to speak. So we were left with a pool of, well, it's very good basketball, it's not the top echelon. So to do what we did with almost a bit like Moneyball type situation with a lot of guys who some were unwanted by other teams and some were we were lucky enough to get because they wanted the challenge of a new franchise. So that first year was great. We ultimately lost the grand final series to Sydney, but the character of the guys shone through all year, and I think that was the strength of the organisation. We recruited character, probably ahead of basketball ability, really, and they all just came together and made Tassie home, and the community got behind us. Sponsorship, all of our sponsors were Tasmanian based, which was fantastic. And then in the second year, we made the semi-finals, and unfortunately had a couple of crucial injuries in the New Zealand series and got knocked out there, and obviously came back last year and won the championship against Melbourne United.
Indeed. And, I mean, given that the AFL now finally, you know, looks like it's going to happen and all those sort of things, is the role model actually for how to do it, a sport in a state?
Yeah, look, I think what it's done is it's created a bit of a blueprint by that you can get all of Tasmania on board, and you've only got to look at the sign-ups for the foundation members of the AFL team. There's 185,000 people
fantastic.
Signed up. So
I wish they'd made it $20 or $50, not
$10. Yeah, that's right. But I think the $10 helped as well, so it wasn't such a big impulse. But they're now connected, so they've got a database of all those people, and there's only 550,000 in Tassie, so you've basically got, what's that, you know, 40% of the population already signed up. So I have no doubt it'll be a success. I have no doubt that, take the politics out of it, the stadium will be built, and they'll launch in 2028, and hopefully the community get behind them, which they're showing already they will, and they go really well.
How big a stadium was the basketball that Jack Chalmers played?
Yeah, we were only at 5,500, so it wasn't particularly big, but we could probably have sold that out twice. We literally, for the first 3 years, sold out every home game, and our membership was oversubscribed. We had a waiting list for membership because there's only so many seats, so with the success, I think the government will look at increasing the size of the stadium they play out of. But it's one of those things, you don't want it to be too big because it loses its intimacy as well. And it's a cauldron down there. It's the loudest place in basketball in Australia to play, and the players love it and the opposition hate it. So it's a good mix.
So you've got now a whole new challenge, and no balls involved in this one. Well, there are, but, you know. I mean, I remember vividly being at Winton when Rod Nash introduced you to media, and it's obviously a very different game, but uses the same sort of thing, high-performance people in a sport. There must be things already, and it's only 2 months in, are we?
It's nearly three, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. There must be things already that you see that, gee, we could do that a little bit. I mean, I don't think you've written the blueprint yet.
No. Oh, look, I think there is. I think one thing, you come in with an open book, essentially, because you haven't been involved and you probably aren't. You know, one of my pet hates is people who say that's the way we've always done it. It drives me nuts. And I had a bit of that in golf. Golf is a very traditional sport. And people would always say, oh, it's because we've always done it. And my argument to that is, well, can we do it better? And we want to be continually improving and getting better at what we do. And I don't just mean tick, but I mean the whole supercar pit lane. I think that for all of the teams to be stronger, I think the supercars as a collaborative need to be stronger.
One of the things, of course, is that you bring a different, you know, having been involved in two sports, a different perspective on it. And there must be things that you see that go, that's something that would be better done, sort of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that as a sport, we could get better at taking our egos away from just winning all the time in our teams and working better together. I think that one of the things that I thought was really a strength of the NBL is the clubs actually, the CEOs of the clubs met regularly to try and improve the league, and the league were willing to do that, and the league took our feedback on board and vice versa. And I think that just looking at things like, you know, buying groups and whatnot, we all come here to New Zealand, we all hire cars through different hire car companies. You know, we look at a deal where there's a cost saving for all of us with one company.
Yeah.
And those sort of things. Just little things that I think that we all are doing the same things. And whilst we're all out there trying to get our own partners and sponsors and we're trying to win on the track, I think that as a collaborative we can do a lot better working together to grow the sport.
Continuing on with Simon Brookhouse, talking about the sport and Tickford Racing in particular, and the way in which you're looking to grow the business, so to speak.
Yeah, look, I think one of the things that we have to look at is that your sponsorship revenue is not there forever, and the world's changing a bit in terms of partners and sponsors wanting a good return on their investment and those sort of things. So they're valuing them a lot more than they ever did. So from our business's perspective, we want to look at other ways that we can generate revenue to ensure that the racing team's sustainable, and that for us is the Tickford engineering side of the business. We have that luxury that we can do a lot of other work outside the race team, which is great. So that's something that we're sort of looking at how we do that. It's also looking at how we can drive a bigger corporate dollar through the racing. Is that through drive days or high performance sessions with corporate entities and those sort of things? So there's a number of different things I think we need to look at. And for me, nothing's off the agenda. You know, any idea is a good idea, and we just need to explore how we can get better and how we can be a high performing team and move forward and generate revenue every which way.
As you'd be well aware, that in your lifetime, since I've certainly been around, that Tickford and ProDrive, and it's been through many iterations and many different brand names and all sorts of things. So another twist in the circle is sort of like, oh, well, okay, this is a change again.
Yeah, look, I think that's right. I think I sort of talk about our organisation, it's really an evolution moving forward rather than a revolution. I think the foundations are really strong, the people are great, and if I was to sort of use the analogy, it's sort of, we've got to renovate the house a little rather than rebuild it. Everything's there, and it's just about sort of doing what we do better and improving every day and analysing how we can get more efficient in what we do as well. And I think, you know, we're a high performance sport where efficiencies are important, and there's efficiencies just in the workplace that we can look at as well and just make things easy for ourselves.
One of the things that in the time that Rod Nash has been there, of course, was an engine program, you know, in-house engine program was very strong. I mean, there have been a lot of different versions of that, and in times, you know, when there are English engines being built and all sorts of different things that clearly weren't working well. But that obviously is a facility that is underused now because it's a stock control engine sort of thing.
Sure.
Is that something that you'll be looking to do?
Absolutely. I mean, there are various other forms of motor racing in this country. There's a lot of engines going around, and we're not. You know, I think one of the things is that people think that we only do Ford. You know, and the reality of it is we're tooled up to do any engine, and we could recondition or rebuild the Hyundai XL engines if we needed to from a racing perspective. But there's the customer focus of you know, what we internally call the heritage cars. We've got two or three of those on the go at the moment for external customers, a couple of FGXs and an FG we're rebuilding, and various other things. So there's lots of opportunity out there, but it's also about how we market that and how we get to market to bring business in. And it doesn't happen overnight. You need to focus yourself on sales and business development in that area, and therefore, you know, utilise the people that we've got to maximise the outputs.
What's your staff roll call, the total number now?
About 47. Yeah.
Still a fair number, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, and I think that, you know, but there's a fair bit of work that goes on as well. You know, we're running three cars in DS2 and two in
when
VCS.
You were most recently in the Jack Jumpers, which you came directly from that to here. What would have been the staff, support staff that you would have?
Yeah, look, we would have had 20 what we called off-court staff, or administration, marketing, general operations, and then we would have had, you've obviously the players, your staff, we had 15 on contract and two training players at 17, and then the high performance staff, we had head coach, three assistant coaches, a development coach, strength and conditioning, two physios and two team managers. So around about the same, to be honest. It was probably in the mid-40s if I tallied it all up. Yeah, plus a few contractors that we used.
All right, yeah. Well, I'll book in for later this year, maybe Sandown sort of.
Yeah, it'd be great, yeah.
Just an update on sort of how you've gone and things like that.
No problem at all.
Thank you, Simon Brookhouse, for joining us inside Supercars.
Thanks, Tony.
Welcome back to Inside Supercars. It's Tarpo, it's a wet Tarpo, and I'm with David Noble. You certainly wouldn't have been to this track before.
No, I haven't.
New Zealand?
Have been to New Zealand, yeah, through my previous AFL experience. Went to Wellington one year had a game over there. But no, I haven't. And been in transit going overseas, but no, first time staying and first time down on Taupo.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Or Taupo.
Taupo, yes. I like Tim Miles running around saying, he said to, at Phillip Island, he said, I haven't been to this new place, Taupo, but I've been to Taupo. Can you tell me what it's like?
Yeah, okay, right, fine.
David, we spoke first of the time when you arrived in the supercar paddock, and Dr. Story, as we know, is someone who thinks out of left field.
Yep.
He sought a sporting professional, and I certainly see you in that guise as somebody who'd been in the AFL ensemble for some time.
Yeah.
And now you've been in this job and the highs and lows you've seen.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how you see things going for you in DJR.
Well, we're probably at a point where, results haven't been exactly what we've wanted, but I believe that's where you learn a lot about yourself and your organisation. So the capacity to understand the whys you're there, the pieces that you need to put in place in order to move yourself back up to the top end of the field. So we're very much, got a really strong lens on ourselves at the moment and looking at everything that we do from internally to externally, performance, delivery to our sponsors and our partnership, and I guess our part that we play in the broader supercars, narrative.
I would have thought that you had the elements all there, sort of the various chess pieces, so to speak, to move around. And it's now just a case of the honing of them and the polishing and things like that?
That's probably fair, but you're always looking to get better, mm-hmm. And if you find a piece, as you've said, that is possibly better, then you'd be negligent to not explore that piece, whatever that might be. So I guess that's probably been one of my roles, is coming in is just with a different look at things and asking questions. Has that been explored before? Have we done this previously? And if it has it succeeded, or why haven't we done it? And just continuing to ask questions to drive the business forward.
You, of course, were the first piece in something, well, it's not, probably not a pattern yet.
Yeah.
But yourself and Simon Brookhouse down at Tickford were people outside motorsport, but sporting professionals who are leaning their perspective on things.
Yep.
And I'm wondering, now 16th month into the job, are there some specific areas you say, gee, why don't we consider doing this sort of thing? Are there some things that you see the way it's done now that maybe supercars as a whole should be looking at?
Yes, I think the broader piece from our competition is to how we can engage our fans on a more regular basis. If we look at the front quarter of the year, we've only raced in Australia once. We fit into the back of F1, and then we're in New Zealand now, and then we go to Perth. So, for us in the sporting narrative at the moment in Australia, we're not very visual. We are very much in the back end of the year when we get to the Enduros, and that's, we've got a very historic place in that, but is there something we can do in the front quarter of the year? Are there some things that we can explore from development? Is there things that supercars can look at from a development phase to continue to grow the brand as we, as we venture around the country? They're probably the things. And look, it is very similar in the sporting structure. If I look at it in regards to a football department, the setup's quite similar. Engineers are coaches. Mechanics are very much like high performance, your fabrication, your machine shop guys, and you've got a commercial space. We don't have anywhere near the amount of athletes that we have. We only have two or four if you look at our co-drivers. So, that probably lends yourself to spending more time on the business than it does on the necessity of the athletes.
There was a time, and obviously you weren't involved when Tony Cochran was around. His spectre of Tony sort of lingers large still. And while I was the only journalist whose accreditation was revoked for things I wrote, I still respected him enormously for the impact he made on the business.
Yeah.
And I certainly believe firmly that there was a period of time when supercars, V8s as they were, V8 supercars, was possibly the third most watched sport in Australia. Unfortunately, I think that slipped. And I'm not just trying to pick, an easy target of the people who now come in there. But it doesn't have the presence it did have. And not just number of rounds, but the way in which the sport is presented. And I just, as you talk about how you need to have a bigger presence out there.
I think Barclay and Shane have got some vision going forward. It's we compete on an entertainment basis. We don't necessarily compete on a sporting basis. We're not competing on a motorsport level. We pitch our brand collectively against other entertainment networks across the industry, and we have to listen to our fans. We have to listen to how we continue to grow that network, the engagement. Everyone sort of talks about the F1. How do we drive to survive? The engagement of the women, the engagement of families. How can we connect our grandparents, with our grandchildren. Like, that's, for me, is one of the interesting aspects. We've got so many middle-aged men and women that have followed the sport for such a long period of time. They've now got grandchildren coming through. How do we build that network so we bring that next group of young members and fans into the sport?
A driver that I'm sure that you would know well of, maybe meet him, Scott McLaughlin.
Yep.
Of course, in his new guise, an IndyCar driver for Roger Penske. He's come out recently and said some things which were not outlandish, but he talked about how possibly supercars are too visible and two drivers are too accessible sort of thing, compared to an IndyCar where they're not as accessible. And sort of, and it was really interesting to read these sort of comments because, gee, I would have thought that, you know, you need to do more than that. Now, I've never wanted to be a driver as such in this category or any category. So I remember full well Garth Tanner doing Red Rooster appearances in Darwin or Greg Murphy in a Kmart.
Yeah.
Well, you know, but your sport, your particular brand in Shell, DJR, Repco, you know, it's a brand that's highly visible.
Yeah.
And it's highly marketable as well because it's got all those good feelings about it, sort of thing. Is that some aspect of that that you'll do more to try and get your brand out there, sort of thing? Not just DJR, but DJR Shell.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, our point of difference is very much the close connection that you can have with our drivers, the garage tours, the access to the drivers as they're coming out with their suits on to get in the car to have a photo. That is unique to our sport, and it is something that we need to embrace, not refute and go, no, there's times that the drivers need to get themselves into the right space, but it is such a point of difference. It's very refreshing. Our fans are so respectful, you know, of what they do. I think from a Shell V-Power racing team, we need to broaden our platforms of membership to engage our fans and grow that membership, you know, further out in the next 3 to 5 years. You know, I think we underservice our members to a degree. We don't perhaps have enough offerings, and that's what we're probably going to work with in the next 3 or 4 years as to how we can not use it as a membership-based organisation, but reward our fans that are more loyal and therefore bring them to races and engage with them on a more regular basis.
With the son who still obviously plays with Collingwood, the reigning premiers, you're still obviously well connected with the AFL. Is at times you sort of think, what am I doing in this motorsport world? Or do you sort of feel now you are fully engaged in it and this is where you are?
No, fully engaged. I don't look back at all with any regrets of the move. I've thoroughly enjoyed not only working for such an iconic brand as the Shell V-Power Racing, Dick Johnson Racing, to be able to work, you know, with just a legend of a sport that I used to watch, you know, on a regular basis, to work with Dr. Story, you know, who's, you know, highly intelligent, very sharp, got great direction. And then you've got Brett and Sean Ralph, you know, as strong business owners. I've learned so much and, you know, such straight shooters and very clear to work with. So I've loved my time here so far and hoping that we can, you know, push towards getting back to the top. I mean, it's all about hunting for us this year.
Yeah, I must say it was very refreshing to see your cars back, you know, in the top four yesterday.
Yeah.
And again in qualifying today. Unfortunately, the rubber, the green, or whatever it's called, that you didn't get able to replicate that in the top 10 shootout.
Yeah.
But that's all a question of just minutes, sort of thing.
Yeah, it is. Look, Anton qualified P2 in the first race in Melbourne. Will finished, I think, fifth or sixth best driver. Anton got bundled out in race two in Melbourne and then didn't get to the start line in race four. So our form hasn't been poor. You know, it's just Anton wasn't able to sort of get to a couple of races on the previous round. And we think we've just been making some slow and steady ground with our setups particularly. And I think the guys did a great job on where they got the cars to today.
One of the things, of course, that paramount in this whole spectrum was, in fact, you know, the parity in the engine sort of situation. Now, I'm just talking to a couple of drivers, and Camaro drivers, and saying that they felt that at Bathurst just gone, that the parity was pretty good there. You know, at times at the Albert Park, there were a couple of times where they felt in a Camaro that the Mustang maybe just was still lacking a little bit of edge. Sort of.
Yeah.
But clearly that, the fact that it's still a work in progress,
And the other extraordinary thing, of course, is the change in the engine whole department. It's now a different situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, look, the parity's close. We've been working really closely with the other teams. We've been working really closely with supercars. They've been terrific help for us over the last month, particularly. You know, we went to Melbourne and had a test day with Tickford, which was great, you know, one of our four teams, and we'll try to continue to do that with our other teams throughout the year if we need to. So the transformation of the engine shop's been really interesting since December. We've put more resources into it. We've gone from probably one and a third to nearly five people in there. We've devoted one of our engineers to sort of oversee that in Mark Fenning, who's been able to work Ryan on that area. To a little bit of our own detriment, but that's okay. We understand the role of the HT is to also provide that platform for all Ford teams. Like, the Ford family needs to be successful. And we've segregated a fair bit of how we prioritise that out. And so we've just got to get our own house in order. But yeah, the progression of the engine shop has been very encouraging. There's still more to come. There's way more testing that we want to do in order to get to a point where we want to dominate races as a Ford team, and particularly TJR.
Indeed. All right, well, thank you, David Noble, for joining us again on Inside Supercars. And maybe I'll book a time in pretty Sandown sort of thing.
Inside Supercars is produced by Thunder Media. Tune in next time for more. Or lock in the podcast on your iTunes or mobile device. Search Inside Supercars. The views expressed on Inside Supercars, including the panellists and guests, do not reflect the views of the network, Thunder Media or Sport Radio. Any publication or rebroadcast of the show without the expressed written permission of Thunder Media is strictly prohibited.